title is very interesting. The title is, Why Is This Happening to Me? I think it's more like asking me the question. If you ask me why, then I say I wouldn't know. And you notice this question is very, it's a very often asked question. When we always ask this question only when things are not good. When something is happening to you, when you walk and bang your head into a wall, you say, why is this happening to me? Right? Or maybe you ran after a bus and just scooted away without you, and you ask, why does this happen to me? Or maybe your partner just say goodbye, I got another new friend. You say, why is does this happening to me? Well, if you ask why, you wouldn't get really a very good and rational answer. Up to a certain stage, you can get the answer. You ask why? You get answer, reasonable. Then when you go push a bit further, there's no rational answer. There's no ultimate answer to why. You ask, why am I here? Okay, just because I want to come here. Simple. Now, why do you want to come here? Again, there are so many things which make me want to come here. There are so many things which wants you to come here. But when you ask why, it has got so many conditions that we can't pinpoint one particular one. Right? And so when we start to ask these sort of questions, we find that you're wasting your time. Now, in my talking about Buddhism, we always try to avoid asking why. Because from my very young days, I was given answers to why, the things and why. Because you know, as young fella, from the childhood days until my adolescence day, until my as a young adult, I always keep on asking why. Because we think that we are very intelligent when we ask why. Maybe, and a lot of scientists ask why too, but they never got an answer. It's because they ask why, therefore they investigate. Right? So, asking why is good for you to investigate, but don't expect an answer. Or you can get an answer for this. Okay, maybe, why am I born? You all have any answer? Now, the answer you get will be very stupid. You might say, that, okay, why are you born? Because of your past karma, therefore you are born. The Buddhist way of telling the thing. Right? And we've got to believe it. There's no proof of it. Why you are born? Right? Or, the other way of answering is, I ask this question, why was I born? It says, your past karma. Why do I have a past karma? Shut up, young man. You're asking too many questions. Nobody can answer it. Right? And same thing when I went to a school where or we are influenced by the other religions, then I ask him, why was I born? I say, oh, God make you being born. He says, why do God make me born? Just shut up. Accept it. So, this is the thing. You know, just think for yourself when you go back tonight. Ask yourself, just give a hypothetical situation. Ask yourself why, and give yourself answers. You come to a time when there is no answer for that why. So, when we say we ask this sort of question is when we are frustrated, then we ask ourselves this question. Right? When you are happy, you don't ask why. Don't you? Hmm? But sometimes some people will say this by not saying why does this happen to me or why is this happening to me. People will always say when it's, what did I do to deserve this, for good and bad as well. Hmm? Sometimes when you go up the stage and get a beautiful trophy or a prize, do you ask yourself, what do I do to deserve this? Then invariably the answer will say, I did very well, that's why I did it. So, yeah, you go answer yourself. Right. So when we ask why, you can put in two categories. Some of the why can be explained, and some of the why cannot be explained. In where research, or in a scientific way, when the scientists have done a lot of research into it, then a lot of this why can be explained. But there's also an ultimate why which cannot be explained. When they're talking about, you know, human beings, why are we here? Blah, 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 you go back. Like you go back to the Big Bang. And why the Big Bang? again. So, up to a certain stage, things can be explained. Because as human beings, we have got that intelligence to explain certain things as we know. But of course, there are some human beings who have got no intelligence at all. Right? It's not that they're stupid, but they always want to accept what people tell them. Like people tell them, give them all sorts of funny answers, and they say, oh, yeah, you know? Like, you know, just like I saw in a TV series before, they were saying that Adam and Eve gave birth to two boys. Right? One is Cain, one is Abel. And in the same story, it says Cain slew Abel. So when the two sons were there, and then one son killed the other, then we are all these human beings. And then when this young guy asked his priest, the priest say, "Oh, God acts in mysterious ways." I said, "Oh yeah, God acts in mysterious ways. I accept it." Now, it's not only the Christians who do that. A lot of Buddhists do that too. In fact, most of them do it. They believe that, you know, what they tell you. So supposing I'm born in this life very ugly. I look at the mirror every day and ugly and say, why am I so ugly? So if I ask some of the religious people whom I know, they tell you in the previous life, you know, you have defaced somebody, that's why this life you're born ugly. They're given all sorts of funny answers. But why am I born ugly? You look in the scientific ways because of genetics, right? Because of genes there, therefore you're born that way. And sometimes when you talk, it's ugly. What do you mean by ugly? It's very, very, what do you call that? Subjective. I look in the mirror, I don't like myself, I say I'm ugly. I look at you, I don't like you, I say you're ugly. But you can be the most beautiful or most good-looking person on earth. Right? So, that's why these sort of things, when you ask questions, we got to be very, very careful on how we ask these questions and why do these questions occur in us? Why do you want to ask this question? We ask, actually sometimes we don't ask questions, we are looking for blames. Now, when things are bad happening to a lot of people, they blame the bad luck. Bad luck. They blame on, natural disaster. They blame on the big spirit somewhere. They blame on the best past karma. Look at the people who are suffering in the tsunami. How many of them? What, supposing you lose everything in the earthquake or whatever, what will you be thinking? If you are superstitious, you think that my previous life I've been doing something bad, therefore this life I've been getting this. Or you might think that God doesn't like me, therefore I get this. Right? So we get all sorts of answer. And that is very common. Human beings like to find out answers for things which they can never get a rational answer. So we look at a Buddhist perspective. Right? Why? Why is this happening to me? In other words, why is something bad happening to me? Right? Well, the Buddha taught always very simple things. The thing which make the Buddha becoming the Buddha, or the prince going out to become a Buddha, is precisely because of this. He asked why. Right? If you know the Buddha story, you find out that as a young man who is brought up in a very, very good or very affluent circumstances, he's rich, father is rich, and he's supposed to be a prince, and he's got everything, and yet, when he went out to the city, according to the stories, he saw a sick man, he saw a dead man, he saw an old man. So all these things gave him that question, why people must fall sick, why must people die, why must people grow old? Now, do you all have an answer for that or not? Even in the 25 centuries later, we study so much science, we have got access to computers and all this. Go and access your computer and ask, why does a person grow old? You never get an answer. Because that is part and parcel of existence. Right? In our existence, there are certain things which will happen to us. The moment we are born, what happens next? You grow older. Right? As you grow older, one fine day, you have got to die. That's natural. There's no person in this world, no human beings in this world, who is born and who will never die. What is the longest lifespan of any human beings in your knowledge? 110, 120, 130? I think last time I read was 138 years old. Right? Anyway, I think that's a very old age. But a lot of people would want to live more than 138. Right? You know, in the when we in the Chinese way, when we wish somebody during Chinese New Year, I wish that you live to very, very old age, meaning that the fellow lived to 1,000 years. Right? See, there's no human beings who will be exempted from death. But do you have answer for that? Why die? Why death? And yet the young prince, as a Buddha, he got that thing in his mind. It stuck on him. He wasn't happy. Then when he saw the sick person, he says, why must people fall sick? Why is this happening to other people? Right? Now, sickness is a condition of your and my existence. All of us must fall sick. Right? And just put your hands up, any of you who has never been sick before, not even toothache, not even a sprain. Yeah? Just go out and ask everybody, send the census and see who has never got sick before. Hmm? I don't think you get anybody without sickness. So again, that is the nature of existence. And then the other one is growing old. At your age, you won't feel the thing, but you come to my age, you know what's growing old like. And even when you are in your 30s, you start to feel you're growing old. How many of you are over 30? Yeah, if I may ask. Okay, I put my hands up. Ellen there. So, now, when you reach your 30, you realize that it's growing old. So, and for a lot of people, they don't like to grow old. Some people they just cut off a few years off the age. Then I say, how? You think how old you are? Oh, I'm 45. Actually, 65. Isn't it? So we try to hide our age. And when you're about 35 or 36 years old and you're still single, and everybody has got partners, their husbands or wife or boyfriends or girlfriends, and you're still alone, then you start to think, I must get one before I grow older. So this is part and parcel of it. That suffering of feeling old. And growing old, actually, there are a lot of other physical things as well. You can't run as fast as you used to. You can't lift heavy weights and things like that. When you go to a certain age, you just decline. And nobody likes it. And ask why do people grow old? There's no explanation for it. It cannot be explained. You grow old because you exist. You grow old because you are born. You get sick because you are born. Of course, we can have an explainable way of saying, why do you get sick if you talk about a specific sickness? Why do you get diarrhea? And to a lot of you, food poisoning is the cause of diarrhea. So last night you must have eaten a lot of food which is contaminated, therefore you're running for the toilet every now and then, so you're sick. That can be explained. Right? But generally, asking people why we must fall sick at any time or other, there's no explanation for it, no answer for it. Right? The answer is, you exist, therefore you must be sick. And quoting one of the famous monks, when we are sick, we always think that it's something wrong. When you see a doctor, what's wrong with the doctor? The monk says, you must go and ask the doctor what's right with me. Right. So, this is the whole thing. Now, we are not happy with our sickness. Therefore, it's like that. The other thing which is not to do with physical thing, why die? Right. Ask why die. You've got to die. That's it. Full stop. No explanation for it. Whether you die now, or next minute, or tomorrow, or 2 years' time or 100 years' time, doesn't matter. It's still death. Right? And none of us here will be exempted from that. All of us will be dead. Bad news, I think, for all of us. Right? But of course, this is, you have got to accept it. There are a lot of people who do not want to die, and yet when the time comes for them to go, they fight, and still they got to go. They don't fight, they still go. It need to be that way, because things are like that. It's existence. In existence, we have got to face this. The physical thing of growing old, sickness, and death. Now, while you are having problem with this few, we also have some very, very big problem as well. Right? That's not physical problem, but the mental problem. We have got to put up, or we have got to face with a lot of nasty things. Right? Things which we do not like. I'm quite sure none of you will like to work very hard for your exams. But yet you have to. Again, why? Because it's the conditions of that, of your course or your uni or whatever, right? And why is it like that? Again, you come to a stage where you get no answer or no proper answer. So, again, it's natural that when you're born as a human being, you have got to face with a lot of things which we do not like. And the opposite of it is a lot of things we like in this world. I like to be, you like to be now, right? Living in a flat by the sea, right? Having all this waves coming in, doing nothing, have two servants serving you, and you know, all your cocktail martinis and all these things, you know? Have your breakfast cooked, then tomorrow morning you can go and stroll in the beach and then see somebody whom you like and all these things, and have a good boyfriend, have a good girlfriend. But you don't get it. Even if you get it, it's just for a short while, right? You go for holidays, you save like mad during the year, and then you go there, you blow all in 1 week. And even then, that's not ideal. So, all this, no, we cannot get the things which we like all the time. We face with things like that. I don't have to give you an example, you go back, you think about it. How much nasty thing you got to put up with. How much pleasant things you cannot really get. I'm quite sure all of you want about, I'm quite sure, I think $3 million. If you can have $3 million falling out of the sky, how good it is, right? But you can't get it. Or maybe get a degree without studying. But you can't get it. That is ideal. The world is not ideal. Life is not meant to be easy. So when you are born, this is what you've got to face. Definite. Nobody is exempted from that. You look at people like you, poor students, okay. You look at people who are really rich, have everything. What do they think about? To have some more. The Chinese tell about one story. He says, this man has got nothing. Not even close to where. Hungry and everything. You give him food to eat. He'd be happy for a while. And after he's happy, what does he think of? I want some clothes to wear. So you got clothes, and you give him nice clothes to wear, okay. Then after he thinks, I'm going to have a house. And he got a house, he got clothes and everything. I want to have wives. So you give him one wife, not enough. Two wives, not enough. Five wives, okay, possibly. Right? And after all five wives, I'm talking about the feudal period, not nowadays. Nowadays you can't have more than one. So, after that, the wives, what does he want? He says, I want a post in the government, Mandarin, to be a Mandarin. So he became a Mandarin. Then after Mandarin, he says, I want to go higher. So the Chinese got 9th grade. So he gave a 9th grade Mandarin. After a while, he became a 6th grade Mandarin. He wants to be a 3rd grade Mandarin. Then he wants to be a 1st grade Mandarin. And the 1st grade Mandarin, after that, he wants to be the minister, prime minister, left, right hand of the emperor. Then after being a prime minister, he thinks, I want to be emperor one day. And of course, the God gave him the emperor. What happens? I want to be emperor forever. I don't want to die. He keeps on doing that. The other way of looking at it is the old Japanese story about this stonemason. So those of you who attended my talks last time, you might have heard this story. This stonemason was in the bottom of the hill, chipping away, cutting off rocks and all these things. So the hill there. And he was chipping the foot of the hill. Then the sun was there sunning at him, and he was sweating. And he thought, oh, how good it is for me to become a sun. So all of a sudden, because he wished, then the great God made him into a sun. So he was there, putting his force on this all the stonemasons of the world, see, making them hot and sweating, saying I'm powerful. Then all of a sudden, the clouds came and hide him. Right? So he's got no more power. So he reckons, the sun is not so powerful as I think. I want to be the cloud. So he became he was made into a cloud, and he couldn't shut off the sun. And then all of a sudden, he kept on moving, and then one day, he cannot move further because of the mountain blocking him. So he says, the mountain is better than the cloud, so he became a mountain. And then all of a sudden, he sees this little stonemason chipping at his legs. So when he asks why, and you know, these sort of things, when we have got this sort of thoughts in us, we are always going round in circles. Right? Either go round in a circle, or we cannot get any answer. Right? We are wasting our time thinking about all those things. Right? So what did the Buddha say that? This is in it. The thing is, no point arguing with, why should I die? Right? Or why should I fall sick? Of course, when you fall sick, there are two ways of looking at it. Why I fall sick? Because of a particular sickness. You can't have the answer for why do I have to fall sick. Right? Old age. Why do I have to put up with nasty things? Mainly this one. And why can't I have good things forever? So this is that beginning of the teachings of the Buddha. Right? Because when we exist in this world, it's full of nasty things. Right? We can be happy, but how long does our happiness last? Right? I'm quite sure all of you have been happy before, but just how long was it? Until you come up with bad things. Okay. So when we talk about the nature of existence, the very nature of existence is unsatisfactoriness. You have got to face up with a lot of this sort of thing. And this unsatisfactoriness, the Buddha put it in one word, right? Old Pali word, dukkha. I'm quite sure all of you would be familiar with it. This dukkha, this world is just like that. Now, if we do not understand all this dukkha, then we will never. We will always carry the burden of this world. In this world, you always have fear. In this world, we always have anger, worries, disappointments, anxieties, jealousies, all these things. And this is the unsatisfactoriness. It's when you are unhappy, you come up with this. When you're angry, you come up with this. You have fear, worries, disappointments, they come with this question. So how not to ask this question? It's very simple. The teachings of the Buddha is full of this sort of things. The Buddha didn't say, shut your thoughts, right? Don't think about it. The Buddha never said about it like that. He never asked us to walk away from this sort of things. He did not want his disciples to be resigned to these sort of things. Right? And they say, this world is full of unsatisfactoriness, so I just let go of everything, I just bear it. It's not like that. To be resigned and to accept are two things, two different things. The Buddha told us to accept it. We've got to accept the fact that when we are born, when we are growing old, when you're sick, all these things are part and parcel of existence. But it's how to deal with it that is very, very important. Right? We are not shutting off problems, but we know the problem, identify the problem, know it, and to deal with it. Trying to get rid of it is impossible. Right? Supposing for me, I say, I don't want to grow old, and yet I look in my mirror tomorrow, I'm getting older. 1 year time I'll be older. 10 years time I'll be older. I don't want to die, and yet one fine day I got to look at my coffin, or they got to put me in my coffin. So this is denying all these things does not work. Don't deny that we have all these things, but it's how we deal with it. So in the Buddhist way, we try to understand things. When you talk about nature of things, the nature of things itself is dukkha, the suffering, unsatisfactoriness, your anger, fear, worries, disappointment, anxiety, and all these things. But how to deal with them is important. If you tell yourself, "Oh, I got nothing of this sort. I'm always a happy person," or whatever, eventually you will be worse off than people who understand. You cannot shut away reality, because that is the nature of existence. So how to deal with it? Now, before we know how to deal with it, we've got to understand where does it come from. When you talk about things, why does this happen to me? Where does it come from? First thing, where does the answer come from? The answer comes from you are not being accepting of things. You don't understand things, therefore you ask it. If you understand things, then you won't ask yourself questions. Now, the Buddha in his teachings talk about this unsatisfactoriness. And he said, okay, in order for you to understand this unsatisfactoriness, try to train yourself to be able to look at it, to be able to see where it comes from. Don't ask why unsatisfactoriness. Know where the unsatisfactoriness comes from. Right? So, he spent nearly 45 years, from time again, reminding people of this teaching. And this teaching is very fundamentally very, very simple. Very simple teaching. It's just a lot of people try to make it difficult, that's all. You've got to see who is suffering. Who gets this unsatisfactoriness? Who asks this question? If you ask the question, okay, you. Alright? If I ask this question, it's me. So assuming I ask this question, where do this question come from? It's very simple again. The Buddha says it's because you're ignorant. Right? Ignorance of what? Ignorance of the nature of things. So this ignorance is very, very important in Buddhism as well. If you understand this ignorance, then you can start to work on it. If you do not understand this ignorance and think that I know everything, then you got no hope. So, when we talk about unsatisfactoriness, what is my unsatisfactoriness? And how do I get this unsatisfactoriness? It's not that people give it to you. It's for me to stretch my hands out and grab them. When you say one of the unsatisfactoriness is anger, right? Why do we get angry? A lot of things we say, he, she, it make me angry. But we seldom say, I am angry at him or her or it. We try to wash away our responsibilities by blaming others. The Buddha says, put the responsibility back to yourself. When somebody says rude things to us, when somebody says rude thing to me, by nature, through my ignorance, I get angry. Right? Because I don't like the thing. It irritates me, so I get angry. The way I get angry is I can get angry without saying anything. For example, if the fella is bigger than me or stronger than me, I say nothing. Right? And go back, get really angry. And then when I see my cat at home, I just kick the cat. So, or if he's smaller than me, it's a different story. Oh, are you dare to call me this? There, take it. Right? So, that's the way we react to it. Right? We bring our anger. And then when you say, why do you all do all this? He make me angry. That's why I did it. In actual fact, we are the one who generate our own anger. Right? So how do we generate our own anger? Because the mind is working. The mind works with the body. Now, for example, when you're angry at rude words, right? What happens? We hear something. And then in our mind, we translate that words, the sound into words. And the words give some meaning to the sound because of the memory, our experience, all these things. It becomes something which we can recognize.
And once you recognize that, you think, okay, that is not a pleasant thing. That's a root thing that Buddha is saying. So after the root thing, I must react to it. So how do you react? Getting angry. And getting angry is the first part. It's not a nice thing. It's horrible. Second part of reaction is, I must do something. When you do something, either hold it in ourselves and make it bigger, or we bring it out to other people. So this is the thing. That's how we get into our problems. But it's not just anger, but everything else. And the way it happens is, you must have this person, and you must have this process. Right? So when that person picks up things, it picks up signals. In the case, it's signals of vibration of the sound. It gets stuck to the ears, it becomes coherent sounds, and then it becomes meaningful sound. Then the meaningful sound becomes unpleasant sound. Then unpleasant sound, you start to react with it. You get this unpleasant feeling. And then when unpleasant feeling starts, we start to develop hatred. You get my point on that? If you don't get the point, just ask me. Interrupt and ask me. I'll be too happy to answer it. Okay? So I put it in this way. One example of hearing, right? This is your ears. When it comes, this vibration here, this vibration in form of sound, right? The sound gets in the ears, what happens? The brain here sends it, right? And then it gives you the message, right? It interprets or recognizes, and then after interpretation, you get the unpleasant sensation, for example, if it's a good word, right? Unpleasant sensation, right? And then you get this unpleasant feeling, and then after that, there will be this reaction. And this reaction is physical. For me, if I get really angry, what happens is the first thing I can feel my blood pressure going up. If I get angrier, maybe I might get a stroke. So that is that's natural. So we do that. Reaction is physical. You can either hold it onto yourself in your body, or you can bring it out. It becomes an action. Okay? By putting it in a very modern way, the Buddha put it in a rather olden way. Right? It keeps on doing that. Things which you see, the same thing also. Assume this is your eyes. Right? You catch hold of something. Right? Catch hold of something. Something which is pleasant. This time. Right? So when you get hold of something, actually what you see is actually colors, forms, shapes, and sizes, and all these things. It goes into the brain. The brain, again, recognizes, interprets, and then knows it as a pleasant feeling. And what happens after the pleasant feeling? That's reaction. And this reaction is the one thing. Right? This one thing in the Buddhist terminology is called craving. And you want more of it, one thing more becomes. Right? It's an important Buddhist word, craving attachment. This is also a form of craving. It's a negative craving, and it's also a negative attachment. Now, what happens is when you want more of it, if you get it, hypothetically, if you see a beautiful thing, I want it, so you get it. If it's somebody else, they say, no, you go away, I'm not going to give it to you. What happens? You do not get. When you do not get it, what happens? You feel unhappy. And that unhappy becomes another brain object. A thought again. This just now was a sight. This is a thought. You're unhappy. Then a lot of things can happen. And you can demand the thing, or you can argue with the person, or you can walk away getting really angry and go home and kick the cat. Okay? So these are the sort of things. Every day, hundreds and thousands of times every day, these sort of things happen to us. When you want to sit for exams, what happens? And especially when you sit for exams and you haven't really prepared for it. Or when the assignment is due and you're still
sitting in somebody's room and chit-chatting, but you know that it's late, but and still don't want to do it. Now why don't you want to do it? Because of your ignorance, because of your laziness. I'm lazy, I don't want to do it, or I'm scared, I don't want to do it. This procrastination, again, I'm very good at that, because I can tell you that. Okay,
so we try to do things, and when the things don't happen the way we want, I'm lazy to do it, and when I am late for sending my assignments, I get certain points deducted from it, and I come out with a result. I say, why is this happening to me? So, whose fault is this?
So we identified the fault, right? It's yours, it's mine, if it's that. It's my problem, I'm responsible for it. If it's your problem, you are responsible for it. You can't run away from it. Right? So if you put all these things together, you can really see what life is all about. Right? For most of us, nearly all of us, you can say, life is not really rosy. We can imagine a very good life, but in reality, life is not that easy after all. But we want an easy life. So what do? Sit down and daydream sometimes. And the daydreaming can come in the form of prayers. For a lot of people, if life in this life is bad, what do they do? Or think, oh, I do this and that, I'll go for a better life, next life, everlasting life, or the next rebirth, I can be reborn in heaven and all these things, right? And I don't have this problem. So we are running away from reality. What the Buddha tells us is, don't run away from that. Live your life by understanding it. Now, once you can understand the thing, understanding is very, very important in Buddhism. They've got right understanding is half of wisdom. Right reflection is the second half. Right? You got to understand, you got to be able to put your understanding into thoughts. Right? So, in this case, how do we acquire this wisdom? Understanding, as I said before, is understanding the reality of life, of existence. Understanding the suffering and the cause of suffering. Now, I've already identified the sufferings, the result of what all these things are happening to us, our anxiety, our fear, worries, disappointment, and everything. And then the result of all these things, it comes through the way our mind works. That's the cause of it. Right? So, the way the Buddha taught is not simply just give you all these words. It gives you the explanation, explain to you fully. Then you got your problems. Where does the problem come from? I said, didn't the Buddha to say, why do we have these problems? But where do these problems come from? This problem comes from, as I explained to you and me. When I want to quarrel with somebody, it's not because somebody picked a quarrel with me. I can always stop quarreling with the person by not wanting to be involved in the quarrel. But not to be involved in the quarrel, you walk away, that's one thing, one way. The other way, you can be there, and if you want to quarrel with you, don't quarrel with the person. But if you say something, just look at the fellow. Sometimes you say something, agree with him, and finally, you have no quarrel. Right? So, you know that this unsatisfactoriness is really generated by ourselves. Right? And what causes it is also because of our psyche. Every one of us have got different characters, but the basic thing is very, very similar. We have got in our mind is full of delusion. Right? In delusion is also called ignorance. It's a basic thing. Now, what is this delusion and what is ignorance? You may be clever, but you still got delusion, still got ignorance. It's the ignorance of the realities of life. We do not want to accept it. It becomes delusion. You know that I'm going to fall sick, and yet I just don't want it. I can't accept it. Then it becomes delusion and ignorance. And from this delusion and ignorance comes two things. Right? The things
which we like and things which we dislike. And this likes becomes our greed. And this dislike become our hatred. So you see these two? Greed, hatred. And this greed and hatred is one common ground. It becomes action. It evolves into action. Right? When you get this action, you get results. Right? The results are not the same. Right?
Usually when we have hatred, we generate more hatred. Supposing I think that you hate me, and then I go and accept your hatred, and I make it to my mind, I hate you back. Then it becomes two hatreds. Right? And then I show my hatred to you, you accept my hatred, right? And then you make your hatred grow, it becomes big hatred. Right? One big hatred and one small hatred. And then I accept your hatred again, I make it two big hatreds. Right? So that's what makes the world grow. And greed is, if you think that hatred is bad, greed is even worse. Right? Because greed, with no, if you don't know when to end the greed, it will get a person into very great trouble. Right? So,
what the Buddha says, ignorance, this ignorance of where this greed and hatred comes from. And when I explain this thing, we know where this greed and hatred comes from. Right?
So, in other words, when you try to understand it, then it gives us a chance to be able to work on it. Right? So it's the working that is what we call real and proper Buddhist practice. Working on it. Right? When you talk about Buddhist practice, what is actually it is? It's to working on your mind and your body. Working on how the mind works and how the body works together with the mind. Right? When we do certain, the mind doesn't work on itself without getting the body. And when the body works, it affects the mind. Right? It's a very important thing in the teachings, because if you look at the scripture in the Buddhist religion, especially the early, very early scriptures, you find that more than half of it deal with the working on the mind. Right? It teaches us how to train. And basically, there are quite a few lines of training which we have to do. Right? A lot of people say, oh, by meditating you change your mind. It's not that simple. There are other things as well you have to do. So meditation is one of them. Meditation actually, if you do it right, now just now I give you the guided meditation, you are doing two things. Right? One is to develop your mindfulness, and the other one to develop your concentration. Now this mindfulness is very important in that it allows us to be aware of this sort of thing. Right? By being able to focus on something and to be with it, you are actually developing concentration. But while you are trying to develop concentration, you got to know that the mind can go away somewhere else. And this going away of somewhere else is a distraction to your mind. It makes you not able to be able to be with that thing for a long time. And so you can see the movement and be aware of this movement. And that awareness comes from your mindfulness practice. So when we do our meditation, we are actually sitting down there and begin to understand the mind. And in the teachings on the understanding of mind, the Buddha talked about a few things, like understanding your body. We pay not very much attention to the body unless you're a bodybuilder. Okay? Look at me right there, you know. Isn't that? Or you are going to go for a beauty competition, then look at the body. But what the Buddha says is not looking at it this way. You don't beautify the body just to appreciate it, because that body, you get the big muscles and all these things, come back another 20 years time and see what happens. Either you grow flabby or you go and all the muscles get hanging around, right? So, but what the Buddha talks about is body, as in the body actions. So for us, our body is constantly in movement. So we are either sitting down, we are standing, we are lying down, or we are moving. Right? There are only four postures which we can have.
So in the basic, most basic training is to work on the body, to understand what is the body doing now. Right? Now your body is, what your body is doing, you are sitting. Right? That's a sitting posture. And usually we do not really put any attention to what our body is doing at any time. When we walk to the bus, to catch a bus, what happens? The mind is away. We are not aware of what the body is doing. When we catch a bus, will the bus be early, will the bus be too late, will I see my friend in the bus, blah, 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 except walking. So in this training, you're making you aware of what you're doing. Like when you're sitting, you're aware of sitting. When you're listening, you're aware of listening. So, putting your mind to do what it is supposed to do at the time. So in this body of ours, we can have all these movements. Right? Standing, sitting, stretching your hand, going for the cup, drinking, eating, going to the toilet. All these things, we are clear about it. Right? Most of us are not clear. When we are brushing our teeth, the mind is somewhere. When you're sipping a cup of tea, the mind goes somewhere. When I sip a cup of tea, when I'm not in the mindful state, what happens? Either I'll be thinking of, you know, my future trip to Malaysia or whatever, or what I'm planning to do tomorrow. Or the other way is sip the tea, then I know the taste. That's being mindful. But the moment I know the taste, then I start to think, where is this tea come from? Is it from China? Is it from South China? Right? What brand of tea it is? What kind of tea is it? Now, again, the mind is gone. You are no longer drinking. I'm just thinking about things. Okay. So the training is to go into the things you are doing. When you are peeling potatoes, peel potatoes, the mind goes away. Right? And sometimes when you cut, only when you peel too much, I peel too much, but in any way you are still not peeling potatoes. So when you put potatoes, you are really properly trained in the Buddhist way, peeling, peeling, peeling. So we have all these movements. We have this breathing, the breathing we have. Right? So we know, we breathe in, breathe out. So in the training in your meditation is going into these sort of things. Then the next one will be mindful of the sensations, right? Sensations of the body. Now this is going a bit more. Sensation of the body, sensation of thoughts, and then into the mental states, right? Mental states is either where it is emotional or free of emotions. Right? Now, to make it short, emotional, you know. Everything, you know, emotions, right? Anger, fear, whatever. You know, the sort of thing which makes you angry, makes you fearful. Then you have a feeling, all of a sudden, when you sit down there, now, for Asians, right? Asians only, this one. When you sit down quietly in the dark room, then all of a sudden the door creak open. You look at nothing. Why did the old door open? Right? What happens? There's a funny sensation coming in. There's a ghost somewhere. Right? And then the ghost, you get scared and all the things. So this fear comes from the feeling of ghost, right? The thought of ghost. The thought of ghost is coming from your sensation of looking at a door open without anybody coming in. Right? So these are the sort of things. It affects us. Our imaginations and all this. So, or when you, a few years ago, there are people who, a group of people succumb to this sort of thing. They see a pillar of smoke or something, right? Or some of them see it. I went to the place, I didn't see anything at all. Then they saw this thing and they say, oh, this is the Virgin Mary. Right? Somewhere in Guji or somewhere. Right? So, they seem to have that because their mind tells them that. I go and see that, I say, no, it looks like a pillar. And the thing is, if you ask some of the pious Buddhists to go there, they tell you it's Kuan Yin. So these are the sort of things. From a sensation, we get it. Now, supposing you, my good story is, you sit down there, suddenly you hear a car screeching there. So what happens? You hear car noise, right? And then the screeching. Now, if you all like screeching cars, then good, the hero is driving. For me, I don't like that. I say, okay. Now, I don't see, I've already got imagination. Must be driven by a young man, smelly, dirty, and all this thing, and hooligan or whatever, and going around the corner. Right? And then you start getting angry. For what you know, the fellow has gone, by now he's gone to Kensington already. I still get very angry. Okay? So, These are the sort of things. So we got to be able to understand our feelings. Right? That feeling is that feeling of the ears, the feeling of the nose, the feeling of the eyes, the feeling of the body, and the feeling of the mind. Right? And it's from there that we get into this emotional state. When I hear some noise I don't like, I get emotional about it. When I see something I like, I also get emotional with it. Now we are being swayed by this emotion 24/7. And 61, that means 60 minutes in 1 hour. So, and there are times when we can be free of emotion, especially when we start to train in our meditation. When you meditate, you find that emotional states arise, you let go. It's free of emotions. And in the Buddhist way, being free of emotions, there are many different kinds of being free of emotions. But I won't go into that in detail because I'm not going to talk about that yet. Right? So, and from this, we have got these mental objects. Right? 1, 2, 3, 4. These mental objects are our anger, fear, etc., etc. A lot of things. Right? And even our laziness, our restlessness, they're all mental objects. Now, in the training, look into these sort of things. When you start to look into sort of things, slowly we are able to come in reality. What my mind is feeling at this moment. What am I reacting to at this moment? Then we can be certain about it because it's your own mind. If you do it right, and without any imagination, you would be alright. Right? So, this is the way to go and avoid asking that question. Because you know that. Why is this happening? You know how is this happening? Right? And know who is responsible for this happening. You know the process of it happening. Right? Because I want to catch on it now, the this and that. So supposing you work very hard for it, or you know you didn't work very hard for it. Right? For example, like you didn't study really hard and being a bit not attentive to your studies and all this, and towards the end, if you don't get good marks, what happens? You won't be asking me these sort of questions. You know for yourself that I haven't been working hard, therefore I don't get it. Right? And as this goes by, you'll be able to answer your own questions a lot better. Right? Because it's very difficult to answer other people's questions. For example, you ask me, why am I born ugly? You ask me. How can I answer you? The only thing I can answer you is through the scientific way, your genetics. Right? Or maybe something else. Maybe you ask me, why am I born beautiful or good looking? I can't answer you either. Right? It's because of the genetics again. Right? These sort of things. You've got to be careful in how we form these sort of questions. And as I said before, everyone is different. So we cannot have a standard answer to the question. Why is this happening to me? That's a very, very general question. So be more specific and say, okay, for example, why? What is this? What is the meaning of this? Now, suffering, this means I fail in my exams. This means I walk into a wall. There are different answers for it as well. There's no one answer for all these things. You want one answer for all these things, you get a very ridiculous answer. Right? I tell you it's a bad karma. Or the other way, I tell you, God make you do that. Right? Both of them are just as ridiculous. But when you know that, you quite understand, then you know that there is such a thing as bad karma. But the bad karma may not be related to what is happening. Okay? So, any questions so far? Now, how many of you are familiar with the Four Noble Truths? So far, I've spoken about the Four Noble Truths, isn't it? I didn't talk about the fourth one, but we're talking about this unsatisfactoriness. Right? Which is this one. you're not happy with it. Then they talk about this cause of unsatisfactoriness. The cause is all these various things here. This is the way it is. The nature of things. And the nature of things being unsatisfactory. Nature of existence itself is unsatisfactoriness. And from a lot of things, you can say that unsatisfactoriness is due to impermanence. Right? This is one of the very important words in Buddhism as well. But things are impermanent. It changes all the time. If you look at it, if you ask me why am I ugly, you are not going to stay ugly forever. Right? There will be somebody who thinks that you are beautiful. It's bound to be. You heard the story of an ugly duckling, have you? Hans Christian Andersen. This little bird was born, and then she compared herself to the others, right? The other ducks, the little ducks. And then she looked so different. And because she looked different, therefore she's considered herself ugly. Because a duck always go to the water and see herself. Why am I so ugly? Because I'm so different from them. And when she grows up, then what happens? She became a swan, which is more beautiful than ducks. So, this impermanence, we don't look at, you see, all these things, whether you're lucky, you're pretty, you're ugly, you're whatever, you're rich, you're poor, they're all relative. It doesn't mean that a person that's got a lot of money in this world are happy. It doesn't mean that people who are poor are unhappy. It's when people are rich and they cannot cannot come to terms with what they have, they become unhappy. If people who have got nothing and cannot come in terms with what they do not have, then they cannot be happy. So the happiness or that the way life goes on smoothly is for people who can come into terms with it. And for us, coming to terms with this is to be able to understand things and say, okay, this time I float, tomorrow I sink, I float again, I sink again. If you are not, when you sink, you float, it's quite difficult. When you float, you want to sink, it's again quite difficult. Right? Now, there are two things which we talk about it now. Sometimes when you're thinking, you say, I give up, I'm sinking. Then, this is called resigning. Resigning to the fact. Now that is no good. That's very, very, very pessimistic. Whereas the Buddha talk about acceptance. The acceptance is to be able to understand and do something about it. When you start understanding these sort of things, then you can do something about it. And the doing something about it is where you interpret things. Right? And know that it's unpleasant. Can you not react on it? So this cutting of the link is very important. Because when you start to react, it becomes a physical and mental reaction. Then the action becomes, again, another input into your brain. And you start to have all these things going on again. So we are going round and round. Right? And, for example, like when you go to the canteen and you get some food which is off, right? What happens after that? Take a bit. $10 for one dish of food, and then they get tastes like something from the toilet. So what happens? You get upset. Okay. You get upset, you get angry, you take the thing and plonk in front of the person who serves the food, and then pop, 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 right? Curse and swear on it. He might give you a replacement, you're still not happy with it. You bring back, you eat, you are not actually enjoying the food. Right? And you have that, you go home, or you go back to your flat, what do you do next? You complain to your flatmate. Like, keep on doing, adding things to it, right? And the next time when you see, you can tell everybody that canteen says rotten food, don't come and eat anymore. Right? And then if you don't stop at that, a lot of people will take a bomb at night and go and bomb the canteen. There are people who do that. Or it can be happen in many other ways, right? But if you have that rotten food, you just take one mouthful and say it's not nice. If you do it in a nicer way, right, say, okay, this is bad food. Now, if you are resigned to it, say, I'm always bad luck. I always get bad food, throw the food away, take the money and go and buy some more. That's being resigned to the fact. You can take the food and say, okay, excuse me, this food doesn't taste nice. Right? Doesn't taste like it should be. And if the fellow is rude to you, just tell her, I'm complaining. Right? Nicely, don't get angry. Right? And chances are when you don't get angry, people will change the food, replace the food for you. If you get angry, they replace the food for you, but after that, you will keep on getting angry. And then you go home, you get angrier and angrier. Right? You're carrying this burden. Whereas if you do it nicely and say, okay, can you change the food for me or not? If you're given the food, at least you don't get angry, you still enjoy the food. So if you look at the Chinese paintings, right, Buddhist paintings, sometimes you see this monk, right, he's always smiling somehow. And then he's got a big bag on his back. Right. So people say that he's a future Buddha, but I don't know if it's a story. The poetry that goes with it is, he says, no, the story that goes with it is, they always tell you that we, as we go along in our life, we keep on picking up things and put in our bag. We're right? Carrying burdens all the time. But in the one of the lines in the painting, it says, you keep on doing it, you're carrying the thing, but the moment you empty your bag, then it becomes very light. So for those of us who can really give up, give up being angry, give up being upset, give up our fear, give up our worry, the more you give up, the more, the better you are. Right? In other words, you look at it, if you start to give up your attachment, putting on things in your bag is getting attachment and more attachment. If you give up attachment, give up a craving, then what causes you all this stress? Now, where do you come with fear, worries, disappointments and so on? And the teachings of the Buddha is just exactly that, teaching you to give up your attachments. It does not ask us to give up our things just, you know, throw in the sea. It's not giving up the material thing, but giving up the physical attachment to it. Give up the mental attachment to it. We are mentally attached to the things which we own. We are mentally attached to our relationship. We are mentally attached to our emotions. Right? Through all these things, we get a strong attachment. But if we were to give up that strong attachment, then there is very little or there is no stress at all. But the Buddha didn't expect us to give up all this attachment overnight. He says, try to train yourself to give up. So when you find we train in our mindfulness meditation, yes, beginning to train ourselves in giving up. Right? Giving up mainly, you know, when you sit down there and your mind goes away, what do? Let go and come back. This letting go is a very, very important concept. It doesn't mean that we physically got to let go. It's just letting go of the mental attachment we have. We attach to relationships. Mentally attached in the way that people whom we like, we are very strong in it. People whom we don't like, we are also very attached to them, but in a very negative way. But if you can start to look into a very rational way, then possibly we can give it up quite easily. Not to give up relationship, but giving up that attachment. So in the correct Buddhist way of looking at things is to give up that attitude. Give up the mental way, the way our mind is attached to all this sort of thing. Because with this attachment, if you're not careful, it just feeds on the mind again and makes it stronger and stronger. Alright, so is there any question? Or did I confuse you even more? Anything you don't understand? Now, I'm talking about the Noble Truth. This one is the explanation of the first two Noble Truths. And the giving up of the attachment is the third Noble Truth. And are you able to give up or not this attachment? We don't say to give up everything overnight. For example, if you are very fussy with losing your pen, I thought the pen is only about 15 cents or 20, no, 50 cents nowadays. You can well afford it now. When you lose a pen, what happens? For a lot of people I know, you get very angry at, somebody stole my pen, number one, anger number one. Or if not that, how can I be so stupid as to lose my pen? Another way of getting angry. I can't make do with this pen. Without this pen, sorry. So you keep on adding all these things. And you got a problem of losing the pen, but what happens is we add the problems to the problem. The mental problem to the physical problem of losing the pen. When I lose the pen, okay. If I want one, if I want to add more problems, say, why should I lose the pen? I like this pen very much, therefore I don't want to lose it. After all, it's only so cheap. If 50 cents can buy me happiness, I pay 50 cents and buy me the happiness of this thing, this sort of thing. 50 cents, I buy a pen, I forget about the old pen, I'll be right. But for a lot of people, no, they must keep on doing it. And you like a cup, your favorite cup, and your friend come and break the cup, what happens? It leads to the breakage of the friendship as well. So, again, you think it's worth it or not? So we, all these thoughts which we entertain, right, it brings about dukkha or unsatisfactoriness. So, in the Buddhist practice, it's all about looking into our own way, our own mind. It's sort of a self-examination to allow us to be able to be more, to understand ourselves a lot more. And meditation is one of the ways you can do to start with. Just be with yourself and see what thoughts, what sort of thoughts are coming up. Know the thoughts, and if the thought's going to cause problem, let go, keep on letting go. And eventually we are be able to let go. And letting go does not mean that you got to let go of the biggest attachment you have. Try to let go of these small little attachments first. I mean, attached to little ideas or things like that, views or material things or immaterial things, doesn't matter, just let go. And sometimes you got very strong views, and when people challenge our views, what happens? So it doesn't mean when we let go of our strong views we must take the views of others. It doesn't mean that either. It's just the attachment to the views. We can also have views. If I think that this pen is green and you come and tell me it's blue, what happens? I get upset with you, right? Now, supposing I can not upset with you, I say it's green, you say it's blue. There are two ways out, right? One is tell them you're stupid, blah, blah, blah. You're blind or you're colorblind. The other thing is to say, okay, I look at this as green and I'm convinced it's green. You can see whatever color you want, that's your choice, right? So if you have that sort of things, then you get little or no problem. It's just when I say it's green, you say it's blue, I try to convince you that it's green, and if you don't want to be convinced, then I get upset, then I get problem, right? Now you see, this is also a very important approach to the Buddhist religion. We know the truth, right? When you practice, you know this truth, but there are people who come and challenge this truth, telling you all these sort of things, right? And then what can you do? You don't really go out and say, you know, you're stupid and all these things, or you're evil, whatever. No, you can have your thoughts, I'll have my thoughts. And that is the sort of spirit we have in our Buddhist practice. We know that, we know the truth. Knowing the truth means we know reality. The reality is no longer a sort of a clouded reality. It's real. It's look everything bare. That's why when you first started, I never say anything about really positive things. Positive things and negative things are the same coin. It's on different sides as well. And that's how Buddhists look at things. It's not, we are quite definite with things, but we've got to understand also that when what you are definite with it, there's also the other side of it. Now when you put all these things together, right, your views, your experiences and all these things, then you find that this question would not exist in your mind at all. When things happen, you know that. I won't ask why does this happen to me. I say, it has happened to me. But when you say, it has happened to me, it says, what am I going to do next? So in Buddhism, reality is now, and what are you going to do now? So you start to go back and put blame on others, on yourself. It serves no purpose. The past is the past. The future has not happened yet. It's what it is now that is important. But as you go into your practice, you find that the now gets shorter and shorter and shorter.
It comes this moment. So, in the what we know is your past will affect your now, and your past plus the now will affect your future. It determines your future, what you're doing now. So, if what you have done in the past and what you've done now is all totally bad, then you're going to get a bad future. But what happens in the past, which is bad, and now you're trying to be good, at least there's a dilution. You keep on having the good now, then your future will be better. In the past, when you have been having all the good things, and you're good now, then your future will be very bright. So, we can change our luck and our fortune by trying to keep to the now, which is good. And the Buddha says, do the wholesome things. Try not to avoid a lot of these things. I think I'm quite sure somebody will come and talk to you in the future. The wholesome and unwholesome deeds, wholesome and unwholesome thoughts, and all this. Okay? So, when you get these sort of things, then I'm quite sure, that's why I said, you know, you are really good Buddhist and practicing Buddhist, this question will never arise in you. Okay? So anybody disagreeing with all these things? Well, you know that this problem comes with two things. You are very, very attached to exams. That's why. Why are you attached to exams? Fear, right? Fear. So get rid of the fear. Buddha said, get rid of fear. The most important. You know that the Buddha image, they all have this sort of things. That's getting rid of the fear. Now, it's much easier said than done. By listening to Dharma talks, you never get rid of fear. You still have fear. Sometimes by listening to Dharma talks, you get even more fear. But there's a way out, right? Some Dharma talks will teach you how to get rid of fear, but they don't put it in a very straightforward way. We start to look at the emotional states arising, and then as you see, you know, the fear will come in stages. It comes in an idea. Right? First thing, you sit down there, you might think that you're very nice, you know, in out breathing, in breath, out breath, and all of a sudden exams. Right? The moment exam comes up because of your nature, right? Your recognition, and that you link the exam with something which is very fearful, and the fear comes up. Then you forget rising and falling. You say, I haven't done my this thing yet. What happens if that the questions come out this and that? Right? So you're actually going out of it. Now, you are rightfully, if you're going to have this fear, I mean, if you haven't studied at all, then you deserve this fear. But you're already well prepared, then why have this fear? So the way to get rid of is when you get this anxiety coming up. Okay, I prepared myself, I studied myself. Then sit down there and just concentrating on the breath and get rid of this thought. Because when you are fearful, even if you sit down and do your studies, you can never study. Because when my younger days, like you guys, I also go and do my studies and all this. I got friends who are really fearful. I don't know why. Because those days I never learned about Buddhism. I'm never scared of exams. Because I know I study very hard. If I pass, I'll pass. If I don't pass, bad luck. Now, the bad luck is dukkha. Right? Now, you can see the whole thing is, there are a lot of uncertainties in life. You might study very hard and so on. On exam day, you fall sick. You can't get up. You get bad diarrhea and so on. You can't get up at all. So, what happens? You miss your exam. You don't get the right results. Okay? Now, whom to blame? Don't blame anybody. When you get diarrhea, you blame the diarrhea. I shouldn't have eaten. But then, even then,
even then, right, blaming things like that in the past does not help matters. Right? Not for saying, right, I blame what I've done and keep on going to the past and neglect my present. Right? So for us, very important thing is the present. Right? You must be able to keep to the present and know that my fear, worries and so on. So when it arises, just know that it arises. And in the meditation training, that's what exactly what we teach people. Right? Just be aware of the mental states and the mental objects. Now, if you know something about the phone, are you anybody going to talk about vulnerable truth this year? Yeah, okay. The last part is the most interesting, right? The Buddha's Four Noble Truths. It's how, you look at the Four Noble Truths, it's not just only a theory and things, it's just how we should conduct our life as Buddhists. Right? That is the blueprint of the path to happiness for Buddhists. The happiness is not something which you are going to click your heels and things like that. It's not going to be strong emotional happiness. It's just the sort of life which is free of stress. Not stressful life, that's all. And when the life is completely free of stress, that would be what we call enlightenment. It's not that you all of a sudden your body turns into gold and then sit cross-legged and everybody worship you. It's not that. It's not enlightenment. It's just that you can see slowly it's changing, right? Changing and being clear about it. And when you are clear about things, you get no stress. Like those guys are telling you, all the Asian guys, or females as well, right? When they sit down quietly and the door clicks open, they got stress. Right? When you sit in a quiet place, right, alone, and all of a sudden the door opens, click, 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 click. You know that the next human being is about half a kilometer away, yeah, alone there. And then you're waiting there expecting the ghost to come in through the door. Right? But actually you're worried for nothing. Right? And for most of us, things like anger, fear, worries, disappointment, is exactly like that. There's a small little problem. The door opens. But we add to the problems, our thoughts, our imaginations, all these things. Right? So, attachment will lead to obsession. And obsession will lead to phobia. So, from one moment, you start to have a little bit of fear, and then the fear worsens and worsens. And that happens with a lot of people. Even in modern day world, I just can't understand this irrational working of the mind. And the Buddha's way of looking at it is to make your mind more rational. Understand, understand, understand. There are a lot of things which you can't understand yet, but understand the ones you can and try to work more and more so that it comes to you. It becomes very natural. Okay, any more questions? Ah, when you say let go, is let it be is one thing. Say it just like, if things happen, right? If we are attached to it, then we let go mentally, but it's still there. You get my point? Right?
Sometimes you say let it go, you're trying to push it.
Oh, not pushing, not by pushing in the way. You're letting go, getting detached from it. Say when the door opens, right? What happens next? You're attached to that. The whole scenario, right? So if you let go, that means you come back to do what you are doing, sitting quietly, and then if the door opens more, okay, the door opens more, that's all. You know, like supposing we see somebody flying out there. Okay, now what's our way we think, right? You see it, that object, and you see there's a man there flying, right? Nothing there, you just go around. Now what is in our minds? Straight away you get attached to it, right? When you get attached to it, you put ideas into it. Right? It's a miracle. Because why is it a miracle? You can't fly, I can't fly. Right? Even the nobody I know can fly, so it must be a miracle. Right? So attached to it, then okay. You get the idea, right? And then the idea is worse than if you can you find that suddenly he stands there and he goes and says, how come you fly? Or he says, I pray to the Kuan Yin for 20 years, then I fly. Or he says, Jesus make me fly. Right? I mean, it's the religious people are always like that. They tell you something like that. And then what happens? You start to go and pray to your Kuan Yin, you start to pray to Jesus. Right? So all these things, what you actually saw was a man flying. Assuming that he really flew. Okay? You're not imagining. Okay? You saw that man really flew. That is what you saw. But you added values to it. And it becomes miracle. Why miracle? Because people can't do it. So there's one, once I was telling this story to a friend of mine, he says, yeah, but you can't do it. I said, no, I can't do it. I can't swim like Ian Falk either. Ian Falk can do things which a lot of people cannot do. He can swim that fast. But is he doing a miracle or not? I said, that's why we put value to this sort of thing. Like we think walking on water is a miracle. We think people flying around is a miracle. So what happens is, a lot of people, they meditate, want to fly, they meditate, want to walk on water. Right? And the Buddha, if you want to know the story, one day the Buddha was walking along the river, and this man was very happy. He says, oh, 20 years I practiced my meditation, now I can walk from this side of the river to the other side of the river, saying that he can walk across. And the Buddha wasn't surprised at him walking on the water. But what the Buddha was saying, you wasted your time. 20 years you meditate and you walk from this end of the river to the other end of the river, to the other side of the river. He says, if I pay the boatman 10 cents or 5 cents, he'll take me there as well. Right? So if you go and meditate to learn how to fly, why are you so stupid? Right? You want to fly to Newcastle, what I do is I earn a bit more money, I pay my airfare to Newcastle, I flew as well. Right? So we all put values on this sort of thing. Flying, walking on water, doing magic and all these things. Right? And then when people can do that, there is also an element of conning. Right? People will make money out of it, people will make money out of the situation. So, for the Buddhists, if you see all these things, unusual things, it's just something which is done. Now, for example, I'll give you another example. Right? If I give you a box of matches, you travel in time, go back 300 years, go back to, say, a Viking village or something, and then strike the match, what happens? You're performing a miracle. I mean, when I was young, I saw those, how the cowboys, the white men used to fool the Indians. They go there and do all sorts of things. They call it the fire stick. Actually, it's a tinder box, you know, like our new modern match box. It's just show the Indians, oh, and they start to worship the men. So same thing with the missionaries in Africa. They're doing all sorts of things, right, making use of that. But if those people have got a bit of wisdom, say, okay, you strike fire, so what? So it's a very good lesson to us. Right? Let's put everything into its perfect perspective. The man flew. That's it. Why did he fly? That's not in the why. He can tell you all sorts of answers, but the only way for you is to accept what he says or not. So this is the way we tend to look at things. The Buddha says, don't believe. Don't be alarmed by things. Come and learn and come and practice. And the practice is not on all this sort of things, not sensational things. The things you practice in Buddhism is something which comes in slowly. It changes your characteristic, changes the way you act, changes the way you react. That changes the way you, not the way you think, but the way you attach to certain ways of behavior. Okay, so if there are no more questions, any more questions? Yes?
If you don't ask why, that makes us ignorant.
No, yeah, you ask why, you see, the thing is, you keep on asking why on the same question. You get answer, and then from the answer, you ask why some more. You're going to end up with the time when there's no answer for it. And when there's no answer for it, people will cook up an answer. And when it's up to you to accept it or not. Say, okay, why must I be born to this family? Okay, because your father and mother have sex, and then that's why you have it. Yeah, you're born. Blah, blah. And then, okay, ask the next one, why? 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 You come to a stage where there's no answer. No rational answer, I would say. Becomes very unreasonable and say, okay, believe what I tell you. What else? So, in Buddhism, that's why we avoid asking these sort of things and say, what it is? What it is? Right? So you know, anger, what it is? Where do I get this anger from? How does it happen? So
You keep on asking that. Then you will come to a stage where you are clear with it and say, okay, the anger comes from here. And when it comes from here, you understand yourself. There's no such thing as asking why anymore. It just comes. Okay, any more questions? Don't accept an answer. It's not a. It's her nature. And some people are like that. That's why I told you, different people have got different things. Now, I've heard so many people trying to explain why tsunami happened in Japan. One is like you say, they killed too many Chinese, and then some of these Chinese, they got really upset with them. And in fact, none of his whole family got killed, but still he hates the Japanese. Okay. Then the other one was saying that, you know why? The Japanese have been killing whales. And you see the picture, that when the tsunami comes, say a pack of whales coming in, and then... And then there are people who say, some of the Western evangelicals, the whole thing is Japanese, they don't believe in God. That's why God sent the tsunami to them. Just like last time when something happened in Newcastle, the earthquake. He says, one of the ministers, he put on a newspaper and says, God is trying to punish the prostitutes and the homosexuals. Right. Now, your friend is exactly the Buddhist version of this. Right? They tell you bad karma or collective karma and all this. Right? Buddha never said about bad karma or bad karma this way or collective karma this way. Now, when you ask why, that's why we get so many different answers. The whales, the religious belief of these people, the way that the Japanese were killing, the Japanese who killed the Chinese were all dead by now, right? So then they're flooding people who are not the people who killed the Chinese, right? So these are not what we call rational answers, right? It's got to be based on belief, the prejudice, the biasness, okay? So you can have 1001 reason for that. All of them are invalid, are of no use, right? So what the Paulus says is, you know, a simple thing is, you ask me why? It's because they are there. It sounds very cruel, but they are there. That's why it happens. That's why they are killed. Now, you ask me why they are there, I don't know. After that, the second why. But people who are religious, they want to give their 20 cents worth and give all sorts of explanation for it. And that's very, very dangerous. You know, a lot of Buddhists are doing that. A lot of Christians are doing that. They seem to know the intention of God, they seem to know that people's past karma. You and I are not supposed to know it. In the Buddhist religion, only the enlightened one, the arahats and the Buddhas, only know the karma of other people. Not plain common people like you and me, we don't know. Yes?
It's called an effect of karma, I don't know why. The Buddha say cause and effect is called karma.
Yes. This is what I'm talking about, the karma.
Yes.
When you, anything which precipitate into action is karma. Action is karma.
Yeah. Well, like now people can't explain certain things. Like, for example, tsunami, Chinese people blaming the Japanese. Can you really call it karma?
No. That's why they are very, very much mistaken. I can say definitely that's not in the Buddhist way of looking at things. The Buddha wouldn't talk about this sort of things. In fact, there are some people who, even there's one case where Ananda, the Buddha's attendant for 25 years, asked the Buddha, he says, oh, so-and-so has died, so-and-so has died. Tell me where so-and-so has gone to, which birth they have. So the Buddha just gave an answer, say, oh, so-and-so became like this, so-and-so became like this. But after that, when they finish it, Okay. So,
after the Buddha said a few words on where, you know, A has gone, B has gone, the next birth, then after that the Buddha says, Ananda, you really tire me out asking me all these stupid questions. So we are not into telling fortunes of other people. Right? And you're doing that, you're actually telling people, no, this is you did this, therefore this happened to you. Now, if you say a specific thing like sickness and all these things to a person, yes. But when it's a group like this, you can't. And the tribe, some Chinese Buddhists are saying this collective karma and all this. Right? It seemingly seems to have valid explanation, but it's still, when you look at it, it's still not logical because nobody can prove it. Right? So when you want to talk about this thing which you can really have a grasp of it, go back to reality. Go back to reality of your mind rather than speculate about all these things outside you. Right? When you train yourself, then you can understand yourself, and that's it. What happens outside, that's just happening. I think this tsunami is going to have some of those religious people are going to have a big day out of it. Everybody is going to put in 20 cents worth of opinions, which is very dangerous too, because they're going to influence a lot of people who have got very simple minds. I mean, I really, you know, last night, that version about the whale I heard last night, somebody came and told me, you know, Jim, what's all this tsunami, you know, why this tsunami happened? I said, I don't know, tsunami happened. There's an earthquake, that's why tsunami happened. Earthquake under the sea, that's why you get these tidal waves. He said, no, I mean the karma business. Say, you know, Japanese have been killing whales. And he talks to me. So, I mean, now when you talk about karma, there are superstitious beliefs about karma. Let's not go into that. When you talk about karma, there is a very rational way of looking at karma. That's this way. Look at it this way. How you perform your actions. It's through processes, because your mind behaving in a certain way, your eyes, nose, ears, your tongue, your body, and your thoughts, right? And then this process, together with, you know, how things happen, slowly one conditions another. And so as you go on your practice, if you do your meditation and you start to learn more about this sort of thing, you find that you'll be very clear about a lot of things, and then won't have these superstitious ideas coming to you. Most important to remove superstition away from Buddhism, because over the last 2,000 years there's a lot of corruption of Buddhism. You find that the Buddha's actual teaching sometimes push aside and other teachings being replaced by beliefs and all these things. So if you come from background especially in the East Asian background, in most backgrounds they still have a lot of this superstitious belief, and they're unlucky when they pray to the Buddha. Do you think praying to the Buddha works? They are unlucky. You try to better your luck. When you want to pass, when you want to study, when you are passing the exam, study very hard. If you take a course and do nothing and pray to the Buddha every day, you'll never pass your exams. So the Buddha never said that he has got the power to help people. And neither can any beings, any other people help you. You only can help yourself. Okay? Okay?